everybody, and welcome to a special all-new bonus episode of The Chat. We have just a few hot topics that we couldn't let escape this week, especially some drama that's going down over in Port Charles on General Hospital, and so much more. But before we dive into our quick list of hot topics, let's check in on our co-host, Alan. How you doing?
I'm good enough.
Very good. And then Tiggs, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Wonderful. So, I mean, yeah, come on. Let's just dive right into General Hospital. Now, this is a pre-recorded episode, so we haven't seen the full week in Port Charles unfold, but I just want to gather some snapshot information for my co-host. So, Alan, pretty big week on General Hospital, especially with the temporary exit of Nicholas Alexander Chavez, who plays Spencer, and the exit for now, wink wink, of Avery Poole, who plays Esme. So where do you rate General Hospital right now this past week on a scale? Let's do 1 to 5.
I'm gonna give it a 3. A 3 is kind enough, because I don't think this whole thing is necessary. They could have just temporarily recast Spencer. But they temporarily recast a bunch of other characters. Sam, Alexis, Jocelyn, the list goes on. And they just could temporarily recast for 3 months, but no, we have to get a fake death. At least it isn't fucking a fake death as an elderly character, which has been very fucking common on soaps recently. There's like fucking 5 of them last year on Days. We have to fake out death of Eric on Bold and Beautiful, with an actor who's about to turn 80. So at least this will be young character this time. But the kid audience knows Spencer isn't dead. He'll be back probably in April. And probably with Esme, because no way is that death sticking. But yeah. The acting has been good. Toby and I and Eden did well on last Friday's episode.
Oh, that scene, those scenes broke my heart between Jocelyn and Trina. Oh my goodness. Like, those were some heavy, heavy scenes.
Yeah, they felt very real.
Yes.
They weren't overly strong. They felt like real grief. And it's partly probably because of what's Eden dealing with in real life, but still very good work.
Definitely. And very happy to see Eden back, of course. But Tix, what about you? Where do you rate this past week, GH, on a scale of 1 to 5?
I haven't watched, so I'll just agree with Alan and say a 3. I'm sure all the screening stuff was good. And I agree with Alan. They should have just recast for 3 months. It could have been a soft launch for the inevitable recast, because we know as soon as Nicholas's contract is up, he's out of there. He may extend it maybe a couple of months just to, you know, until they find a decent recast or whatever they're going to do with Spencer, but he's gone. He's out of there. And if they do luck up and get him to sign another contract, it's going to have way more money and a shit ton of outs. So, you know, I mean, hey, stranger things have happened. When it comes to GH, I don't want to keep pissing on it, and it's just kind of counterproductive to kind of talk about it right now, because, like, what's the use of bitching about Chris and Dan? They're gone. So we just have to deal with the next 6-7 weeks of their crap until, you know, Patrick Mulcahy and Liz Corte, you know, start airing their stuff. So, you know, it's just like, you know, it's kind of, you just got to kind of take what you can get, you know, like we have been doing with this show. Just, you know, take the moments, take the performances, and, you know, and just hope, you know, things get better as we progress into the spring. So let's just, you know, I don't know. Because, you know, Jason, I think Steve Burton's first air date back is March 6th or something like that. And that's going to be kind of going into the tail end of Chris and Dan. So we don't know how these losers decided to reintroduce Jason. So there's that. So we'll see. We'll see.
I'm back to watching 3 out of the 4 soaps, and I have been for a while. But yeah, I was talking about it with our co-host Rodrigo, who will hopefully get to join us again next week. But we were really talking very heavily about GH one night. And I said to him, I said, you know what? I haven't actually minded General Hospital all of this past month. So, I mean, I'm going to agree with Alan. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5 for this past week's material, which was quite a big week because of Spencer and Trina. But, you know, my thing is I understand all the fan outrage, and I'm right there with them, because we've been burned one too many times. And GH, historically with Chris and Dan, is good from like January to March, and then not good again until like October to December. So it's like they really have had trouble with sustaining the show for a very lengthy period of time. However, you know, there have been things that I have really enjoyed this past month, and I feel like the show as a whole has flowed better, but it just kind of seems, and I think it was Alan who maybe said this on Twitter, it just kind of seems like they're chucking a lot of stuff at the wall, like throwing a lot of stuff at the wall right now.
The Random Saga recast?
Yeah, which we'll get into. I don't actually mind that as much as other people do, but it was kind of random, but like I don't mind it in the long run. And I think that's where I'm at with General Hospital right now, as Chris and Dan come to an end, is there's like stuff that is random, but then I don't mind it as much. But then I'm also like, okay, why did it happen?
That's my whole thing. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Exactly. Like, I'm not, like, it's really not my biggest gripe. It's definitely not the worst soap on the air. I don't even think The Young and the Restless is the worst soap on the air right now, shockingly. But it's just, yeah, there's a lot of, oh, I don't mind this, but why did it happen? What is the reason for why this happened? I will say, though, when it comes to Spencer and Trina, I really loved how Spencer's exit was crafted before the fake death happened. I thought the episode with him being tied down, Trina coming in to save her man, hitting the shit out of Esme with that wrench, so rightly deserved. Their cat fight, even leading up to that, like all of that was wonderful, soapy material. I just think, however, that this should have been Esme's faked death. It should have been Esme going overboard on the ship. And maybe you bring Avery Poole back, you know, late summer for 2 months, and then you give the real Esme death and you let Trina do it. I didn't think there was a need to kill Spencer. I'm like, we could have just done a temporary recast, because the show temporarily recasts everybody. You know, it's not necessarily discounting Nicholas's amazing performance, Emmy-winning performance at that, by temporarily recasting Spencer for 2 months. Because my thing is like, they recast everybody on the show. Nancy Lee Grahn is a soap opera legend who's worked in the business for almost 40 years. And she was recast. It's like,
exactly, and they recast her at the most critical point in Alexis' story.
Yeah, like the huge climax to the Alexis and Neil harmony situation.
It wasn't even a good recast, but they recast. Yeah,
like they really couldn't have called up Alice Barrett for that.
Okay, because good lord, they found that woman. They found that woman at the container store.
Ugh. For God's sakes, her name was Stephanie Erb. What type of soap opera actress denotes the name? Oh, what's your name? Nancy Lee Grahn. Oh, and what's your name is? Stephanie Erb. Can I go on my lunch break? Like, ugh.
And they generally recast Maxie multiple times. Because there's Jen Lilly for like 9 months, Molly Burnett, and that lit other lady.
From Hope and Faith. Yeah. She was the daughter on Hope and Faith.
You'll have to stand there for a day or two.
Yeah, I forgot all about her. I mean, yes. whenever you think about Hope and Faith, you're like, oh yeah, Megan Fox. Oh, and the other one played her sister.
She was, yeah. But yeah, so GH. Oh my goodness. But anyway, let's talk then about how we feel about Spencer's death. So on the episode from Monday, they went into great detail about the death, about the grieving. Alexis and Sam wrote Spencer's obituary. Nicholas knocked on Laura's door and ended up turning himself in. So Laura called Dante to arrest him. So Spencer's death is really kind of settling into Port Charles. So, Alan, how did you feel about that? How do you feel about how everybody's grieving Spencer?
It's okay so far. I can tell Adam Huss desperately wants that contract. He wants to be permanent Nicholas. He's like, Frank Farrell, give me that fucking contract. You don't need to hire Drudy Bill Suso or whatever after you run into it at Whole Foods. Give me the damn contract, bitch. And I'm in agreement with him. He deserves a contract. Hire him.
Yeah. Like, he is absolutely, like, killing it with these scenes. Like, he and Jeannie act so great opposite one another. He and Nicholas acted so great opposite one another when Nicholas, well, he and Spencer, played by Nicholas, but they acted so great opposite one another when Spencer gave Nicholas Ace. Like, he is a really good underrated actor here. And I think it is important to note that the memory of Tyler will live on forever. And there was nobody like Tyler, especially when Nicholas was at the height of his popularity. But Adam is definitely, in my opinion, the right direction to go for the character, so the story can move forward. Additionally, I really thought, you know, this is a very wonky told story. It's got a lot of loose ends, but the acting has been great. I thought Nancy Lee Grahn, Alexis made me tear up when she was writing that obituary with Sam and when they were discussing all of the memories from when Nicholas Bechtel played Spencer. I thought that was a really cool nod to the history. And like Jeannie Francis has been knocking it out of the park. Jeannie has been doing amazing work. So yeah, lots of good acting and a very not shitty story, but wonky told story, in my opinion.
I'm glad they remembered Nicholas Bechtel era because that was people's introduction to the character.
Yes.
Nicholas Chavez, who made the character who he is, that was a little brat from the start.
And, you know, a lot of those character traits that we've seen in adult Spencer are from kid Spencer, are from Nicholas Bechtel Spencer. Like, adult Spencer still loves Shakespeare, so I'm glad they pay tribute to that and they set up that drama fund. And, you know, a lot of trying to change course of entitling ways, you know, went from kid Spencer to adult Spencer. So, and I thought, oh my gosh, it really tugged at my heartstrings when Jeannie Francis looked at that picture of Nicholas Bechtel. Like, I was like, oh my God. So yeah, I think everybody's doing beautiful work. And Tabiana has really, for me personally, knocked it out of the park. I think what's going on with Tabiana now is she is finally getting material that challenges her as an actress. Like, I mean, this is material that we've seen soap opera greats tackle forever. You know, Mary Beth Evans has done the fake death material with Patch on Days of Our Lives, and Deidre Hall has done it, and Melody Thomas Scott has done it. Like, Tabiana is finally getting more of that super couple adult material, and I think she is tackling it so very well. So I'll be interested to see how Trina continues to develop while Spencer is presumed dead.
And see, that's the one good thing about this is that, you know, Sydney Michaela had her chance to develop Trina before Spencer came along. So now Tabiana is going to have like a window to like really really develop Trina without Spencer being there? You know, what does life look like without Spencer for Trina, especially for this version of Trina? We saw Sydney's version develop and mature before she even met Spencer. So it's going to be interesting over the next couple months to see how Trina moves before, you know, her man eventually climbs back up that a cliff? I won't say a parapet, but they won that window there.
Well,
but
he fell off of the Haunted Star in Paris.
When he swims his ass back to shore.
I just hope the one thing, and God, I think Patrick Mulcahy would be kind of over these types of stories. Please do not give Spencer amnesia, for the love of Jesus Lord in the sky.
Ron Astley would do that.
Oh, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. Ron would do that. Ron would do the rape man's all over again. It will be that Spencer will resurface with amnesia, thinking that him and Esme are engaged or some shit like that, and she remembers everything, and she's been lying to Spencer all day. Yeah, that's some bullshit, Ron.
Well, Ron has never written the best for black characters, so he might actually have Spencer call Esme Trina. Like, oh my God. Ronald Colabardi. But hey, it's Patrick Mulcahy, it's Liz Corte, and Patrick is, I would describe, a lot of people are wondering, and I've had a lot of GH fans come in my inbox and ask me about Patrick, and I want to say Patrick is a traditional soap writer with a big modern twist. Because, and I wanted to give GH fans a lot of hope. I'm like, you all have to realize one of the biggest trainers in Patrick's soap opera career was Bridget Dobson, who passed away a few weeks ago. May she rest in peace. But Bridget was the daughter of General Hospital's creators, Frank and Doris Hursley. And she trained Patrick very heavily when Patrick thought he was done writing soaps after Search for Tomorrow in Texas. He got a call from Bridget, who asked him to come and write on Santa Barbara, and she trained him quite well. I think Patrick will hopefully take some new twist with Liz, and that we won't just go traditional routes like amnesia.
I think he will, because I think, you know, maybe one of the reasons why he did initially decide to retire and leave Bold, because, you know, we all know how it is, the boat. You know, you may want to do this, you may want to do that, but ultimately it's down to Brad. We all know Brad is going to Brad. So, and that probably became stifling creatively for Patrick.
Yeah.
I mean, because like I said, you could always tell when Patrick Mulcahy wrote an episode because it felt like the Bold and the Goddamn Beautiful again. Same with Michelle Valjean. It feels like the show is supposed to be. Other than some bullshit Brad wanted to be each and every passing day. and then he has experience with GH. He helped create Carly. So we finally have a writer who knows Caroline. And hopefully he can write her true to form. And not this misunderstood heroine bullshit they've been trying to peddle for the last 14 years.
Definitely. So, Alan, what about you? Do you feel as though Patrick will go the non-traditional soap route with Spencer's return?
I don't know. We also have to remember Ben Pregnanzi's involved in this, and Nathan Barney, so they could network notice ass to death, and we could do that with amnesia. But I don't know if Patrick will be back to soaps to get micromanaged again.
That's true. I feel as though, you know, because I have a friend who knows a family member of Patrick's, and I heard, and I'll say allegedly, but I heard he was done. Like, he was full on done. I ain't coming back nowhere. I ain't doing nothing. Soap operas are not for me no more. And so to get him out of retirement, I mean, I feel as though, okay, what level of perk did that come with for him? You know, does he have autonomy? Will he get the chance to sit with Liz so they can actually tell stories and fix the show a little bit?
I think so. Like, for him to come out of retirement after 5 years, it has to be, well, of course, the pay. I ain't mad at you, Pat. But, you know, but they, along with, you know, Nathan Varney and Frank, move.
Yeah.
Go balance checkbooks or something, damn it. And let these people do their job. Y'all just worry about keeping the show under budget and looking pretty. You let them do what the hell they need to do. And for the love of God, let Mark Teschner do his damn job.
It's Frank's really forcing Finn and Liz on us, and I don't know if he's going to let Patrick and Elizabeth end that fucking shit show.
They have to. It's time. If you finally had the balls to fire Roger Howard, have another set of balls and fire goddamn Michael Easton, because it's time, baby. It's time. Shit.
Oh, goodness. Well, let's talk about the casting of a new Jagger on the show. So coming straight from our friends at Daytime Confidential, General Hospital has cast actor and producer Adam J. Harrington in the role of John Jagger Cates. GH viewers saw him slide into the role on Friday's episode during an FBI raid alongside Anna and Jordan. Harrington, best known for his roles in The Lincoln Lawyer, Bosch, and Parks and Recreation, takes over the role from Antonio Sabato Jr., who played the bad boy turned G-man from 1992 until 1994, and again in 1995. In 2008, Sabato Jr. returned as Jagger for the defunct General Hospital night shift. So, Alan, let's go to you. We all agree that this was quite a random callback to a small part of GH's history, but what are you thinking of Jagger's reintroduction?
This is random as fucking hell, but I'm thinking Jagger's probably going to end up being Dex's father, and that's why he looks like that. Because if there, he looks nothing like Antonio Sabato Jr., which is, okay, it's normal recast, not look anything like the previous actor, that happens.
But have a Twitter thread about it.
Because Source of K does not look anything like Ron Moss. Yeah, I think they cast for resemblance to Evan Hofer, who Adam Harrington does resemble, because if Jagger is Dex's father, maybe Dex would finally become a character that will be worth having around, other than being Diet Jason. Because we have real Jason coming back, so what's Dex going to be purpose going to be on the campus after that? So they need to come up with something.
Well, and you know, I understand the I get it. There's Lucky out there. There's Lulu. Look, I'm wishful casting those people every day, every damn day. There's Serena Baldwin. I get it. But I, and many people included, have always said that General Hospital needs to stop bringing on new characters and actually dig into their history. This time around, they did. And Jagger is already interacting with people he should be interacting with. And I thought it was so great. I loved his scene with Olivia and talking about autism in children and their personal experiences. I loved that. And I loved how he and Anna talked about Robin on Monday's show. I feel as though this so far is a really interesting return. And honestly, this is something that even Ron Colavardi was doing. This is something where you're like, what? Who is this character? Like, why is this character back? It's that surprise thing that soap operas used to do a lot, where anybody could pop up at any time. And I feel as though it is so interesting that Jagger has popped back in, because there is a lot of people that Jagger can interact with. We have, you know, there's Scott, there's Sonny. He's already interacted with Anna. I feel as though even Carly getting to know Jagger a little bit would be interesting too, because Jagger was involved in a story with Bobby when Cal Atkins came along and tried to assault Bobby. So there is a lot that can happen with Jagger. They just have to play it smart. And I would be interested if Dex was Littlestone. And I'm also interested in how he and Jason will interact. Now, a lot of people have said that maybe they feel as though Jagger knows something that leads to Jason's return. So I'm interested. GH, the casting was random as hell. The character return was random as hell. But it's not the worst thing, in my opinion, that the show has done. But Tiggs, what are your thoughts on the return of Jagger?
Why? 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 Out of 60 fucking years. Like, even if this was Antonio Sabato Jr.'s MAGA loving ass, why? To me, I mean, I know there are people there connected to some of the... Karen's dead. Brenda ain't there. Robin ain't there. Stone's dead. Why? Why, Ebony? Why? But I just... For what? They could have came up with somebody else. I don't know. I just... They could have just did something else. If he is going to turn out to be Dex's father... Okay. All right. I just don't know. It's just, he has the paths with Bobby and stuff, but it's just like, of course, the first screenshot you see is him crossing paths with Carly. And I'm just like, oh, God. But yeah, maybe they can make sense of it, you know, Liz and Patrick, because I just, for what? And ain't he going by his government name now? Is he ain't even going by Jagger no more?
Yeah, he goes by John.
That's so stupid.
John's such a boring name.
That's so stupid. It's stupid. You already have this recast who doesn't look shit like the original. And you're going to have to keep on reminding people, oh no, girl, that's Jagger. That ain't no motherfucking Jagger. Who the hell is this? Who? Jagger who? That motherfucker should have been Jax or something. Cause I'm just like, what? Who is what? I wish I could be a little bit more excited, like, you know, how I was, you know, when Kim Delaney came. And I think that's because it's a known soul bet that everybody likes. And she gave me a reason to give a damn about Chase. Cause for a while, I'm like, Josh Rooker is pretty to look at, but why should I give a fuck about Chase? Jackie Templeton is his mom. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. But this is just... Jagger. And we can't even call the motherfucker Jagger no more.
Well, but I mean, obviously, you know, close friends and people who knew him are still going to refer to him as Jagger because he told Anna, I go by John now, and Anna was still calling his ass Jagger throughout every scene. So, I mean, the John thing really seems to only come in for professional reasons. Like, you know, he introduced himself to Jordan as John because they were discussing how he's placing Jordan and Anna under arrest in Monday's episode in this past week. So, my thing is thank God it wasn't another fucking new character.
Well, no, I'm happy it's not a new character, but it just, he could have been somebody else. he could have been.
But also, I mean, don't we always say that even about the new characters? I mean, it could always be somebody else. I mean, you know, 40-year-old Molly could have been Lulu. But, you know, I just, it's not the worst thing.
No, it's not. It's not, but it's just, It's just one of those, it's shit like this that, which is why the fans wanted Chris and Dan gone in the first place. It's like, did you motherfucker do any research on Jagger? Did you go to Soap Central? Because y'all could at least try to cast somebody that looked like Jagger. I'm happy.
Oh my God, okay, I'm sorry.
Happy. I'm happy that you didn't go with Antonio Sabato Jr. And I know that Jagger was just a white man. Well, I'm sorry.
God damn. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry because Jagger and Stone, like, their mama was Latino. Okay? I'm sorry.
Robin Christopher took over for Alicia Coppola in Another World. I'm sorry. It doesn't bother me.
I don't give a damn. That's because she robbed motherfucking Christopher.
Damn Fugger Regal is a foot taller than EJ, and we love him. Cynthia Watros is a foot shorter than Michelle Stafford and has blonde hair, and we love her as Nina. It's like, I don't know. It doesn't bother me when they don't look. I mean, some people not you two, but some people were acting like this is when Bill Bell cast that white woman to play Keisha. It's
well, like... no, it's not that. Like I said, it's not just the casting. It's just like
it's more of the randomness. It's like
it's just so like
why is this?
Y'all could have cast him as any other person from the past. That God damn it, he could have been Sly Eckert. Shit. Like he could he could have been Carly's cousin or some shit. Like I just
my God, not Carly. He just said Carly's cousin.
It's just some shit. Because I'm just like, what?
You know who he could have been? He could have been Tom Hardy. He could have even been Tom Hardy taking over for Matthew Ashford.
What is Tom Hardy 15, 20 years younger? Shit.
Well,
Tom
hey,
Hardy supposed to be 65 years old. Yeah, if you bring it on Tom Hardy need to be dating Alexis. Shit.
I mean, I'm just saying, Jordan is 30 years old with a 30-year-old child, so.
Well, this Jordan is halfway old enough to be a kind of 15 shopper in her early 40s. So I think she's even older than Vanessa Amthor.
I mean, if they actually, would dress Adam Harrington properly, then maybe he would look like himself and it wouldn't be such a stretch. Because I'm like, oh my God, that GH wardrobe department needs to go. It's like, that shit is awful.
Because I said, he gonna be, who?
And see, also, he also seems to be dyeing his hair because in one of his latest headshots, that man had a full head of gray hair. So I'm like.
How old is he?
He's 51.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's why I think, because that's another thing. Okay. I'm also that person where sometimes you can get away with ages for me as well on a soap opera, as long as it's not overly drastic. Like, if it's not Molly being 40 years old all of a sudden, then I'm cool with it. But I mean, the guy's like a decade younger than Matt Ashford. You know what I mean? It wouldn't. Yeah. Soaps play with age all the time. It's like, even Stacey Hyduke, isn't she younger than Eileen Davidson? So it's like,
no. You know who the motherfucker could have been? I'm gonna tell you who the fuck he could have been. And it would have been way more relevant to story than fucking Jagger. He could have been Stephen fucking Lars.
Oh yeah, he would have been a good Stephen Lars too. Yeah.
Liz and Esme's big brother.
Mm-hmm. Dummy. And especially interacting with Allie Mills.
It wrote itself. He could have been Stephen Lars. What?
Yeah.
Ugh.
And then he also could have checked back in with Olivia. Like,
yeah. Because Stephen, the one that played Stephen 20 years ago, he crushed on Tamara Bronze Carly. Then, Scott Reeves was with Olivia. God, he could have came and hated Finn and told Liz to dump him. Oh, so many things.
Yeah, and he could have checked back in with Liz, like, hey, how are you doing after, the whole, dad visit and everything, so.
Like, he could have been horrified to know that he has a little sister and her father, Brian Chamberlain, and he got a new nephew that he never knew about so much.
Hell, he's got 100 siblings at this point. I mean, poor Stephen Lars just been behind bars, and he's got 63 half-sisters. I'm like, goddamn. But yeah.
And that's another thing, too. Yep, that's another thing, too. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, because he could have been clashing with Finn. Finn's raising Violet, his niece.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, Frank. Ugh.
But yeah, I'm still.
He's on the do list because they need to resolve the Hayden issue because that's been lingering for too long.
They need to. And they need to resolve it by hiring Rebecca Buddy back for 2 weeks and letting her steal her man back from Liz and take him and that brat and leave poor Charles.
And then you know what? I would be okay if they kept Becky Buddy. Oh no, Finn died in a car crash. Oh no, because I like Becky, so I ain't got no problem.
And if they can't get Becky, God damn it, you going and you call that damn Melissa Archer. Shit.
Oh, Melissa, dye your hair a little bit darker, baby. Go on, be Hayden. Okay.
No, of course, you're suddenly redhead. No one would care. Just take Finn.
Yeah, they wouldn't care. She would still have the chemistry with Michael Easton. I can totally see her just being a a nasty little bitch to Rebecca Hurst. You I just see her, you know, being Ace Boon Coons with Jane Elliott.
You just mentioned her red hair, so it's almost like people shouldn't fucking give a shit what different recasts look like. Ah!
No, I'm standing by that shit with Jagger. Fuck that. But yeah, like I said,
if you want to
make Finn happen, that's what you do. You bring back Hayden, because that was his only successful pairing on this damn show.
It was, but people were out here saying that Jordy Valasuso should have played Jagger, and I'm like, he is not fucking Latino. That was a white man. It's like Jagger was about as Latino as Lindsay Hartley was for 9 years on Passions.
Yeah, but I mean, but like I said, like, you know, I get it. So what? He wasn't supposed to be Latino. Well, goddamn it, he was played by a Latino actor, and that baby playing Stone looked Latino too. Shit.
No, he wasn't. Antonio Sabato Jr. is of Italian and some
But whatever. They wasn't Lily White. Shit. They mama could have been something else. Shit.
Okay, well, maybe they were Crystal Khalil White. I'm playing.
Oh, good.
I'm Pakistani. But anyway, let's move on. That was a lot. So, also in the world of GH news, William Lipton is finally coming back as Cameron. Super duper excited for that. And also, on the other hand, Tiggs already mentioned it. So Steve Burton's official reintroduction of Jason will happen on March 4th. So, Alan, let's go to you. What do you think of these two returns?
I mean, I see William Lipton back. I doubt they're probably going to do anything substantial with Cameron. Probably just be there for Spencer's quotation marks funeral and then leave, probably, during this show. And I'm not excited for Jason to play the same shit he did 20 years ago, because he's probably been brainwashed or something like that for the last 2 years, and that's probably what the story's going to be. And I have no interest. And how do I explain Jason having those tattoos? Because, you know, they have in that set photo, he has that fucking ugly ass tattoo out. So.
Oh my god, I'm sorry, you all. He looks so fucking ridiculous. He looked ridiculous. I'm like, this man is almost 60 goddamn years old. Get out that box because they already spoiled their own story. Like, you know, I was hoping by hope, okay, maybe this time he will be Jason Quartermain. Maybe we will do something different. He's in the boxing ring at Sonny's gym. They've spoiled their own story once again. It's nothing but Jason doing the same fucking shit he was doing for the past 25 years.
But with tattoos now. Ooh.
Let's just hope that
the crisis.
Let's hope that Patrick and Liz just find something for him to do. Because, like I said, Jason has always been as good as whoever they got him screwing.
And like I want them to do Liz again. And if they need to
give Liaison their fair shot. Just do it. Like him and Carly was a missed opportunity. Nah. Britt's dead. Him and Sam. So it's just like, just go ahead, give us Liaison.
Definitely.
Other than that, it's just like, who y'all gonna pair him with? I mean, and then yeah, cause we all just missed the bromance with him and Sonny. They're both, you know, he's holding a gun and Sonny's telling him about his bipolar meds. Giving him diarrhea, and, you know, Jason sciatica kicking in, and his trigger finger ain't what it used to be. Shit.
His trigger finger, Jesus Christ. Oh, Lord.
It's quite something they did 20 years ago with Drooper your balls, basically.
Right. He still got to tell 60-year-old Carly to count to 10 or count
down. Oh my god, not 60. Lord.
Okay, I'm sorry. Lord, I love you, girl. All right. Well, shit. 53-year-old Carly with 2 grandbabies and a first grader. He still got to tell her ass to count to 10. Count to 5. Carly get AARP and she still need somebody to counsel her and count to 5. The only good thing about Jason coming back is she gonna toss Drew aside like yesterday's garbage, like she did the last time, Jason.
Look, and that fucking kills me, because Sonny was all up in that Puerto Rican island, and he ain't giving a shit about Donna. It's all about Avery. I'm like, all he's talked about is Avery, Avery, Avery. He was like, make sure everybody's got, you know, people on him. He ain't said shit about Donna. I'm like, oh, okay. Fuck Donna then. I guess you can let Donna get blown up like Lily did. Oh, he's like, I'm tired.
Hopefully, yeah, I mean, since they have John, and scenes with Carly, I mean, they can at least mention the fact that, you know, one of her kids is named after his brother. I guess that. They can commiserate at Bobby's. How Morgan's middle name is Stone.
Which, you know, I did like that too. Like in his first scene, he's like, oh, when did you change the name of this place? And she was like, oh, you know, after my mom just died. And he was like, oh, I used to work here. And like, that was all really cute. So I did like that, like, nod to history.
I do love the fact that, you know, they named it Bobby's. And I guess the only good thing about her taking over Crimson is that Carly actually has something to do, because her running that diner, that's not Carly. Her name it after Bobby, whatever. But
she's
like,
doing what I wish Sharon on The Young and the Restless would do. She's like, my plate is too full. I need to find a general manager, and I'm not going to be showing my face here. Like, Sharon is still in that coffee house every damn episode.
At a fucking coffee house.
It's like Sharon is a licensed therapist and owns her own company, but she's still stuck at Crimson Lights passing out free advice in croissants.
And doing the occasional Zoom meeting with businessmen. Like, girl.
Wearing like a Dolce & Gabbana dress. With some Prada sling back heels on.
One thing about Sharon, she gonna dress.
Oh, okay. Sharon K said, I may be pouring coffee, but bitch, I'm pouring it with a Birkin bag in one of my arms.
Oh my God. Well, let's move on now to somebody we haven't talked about in a while, because there's been no news, and that is Wendy Williams. So they are officially coming out with a 2-night documentary series on Lifetime Movie Network titled What Happened to Wendy Williams? And it has Wendy front and center in the camera after all this time. Talking about alcoholism, talking about drug addiction, talking about conservatorship, talking about how she has no money. The trailer was really, really heavy. So, Tiggs, what do you think of this 2-night documentary event?
I mean, I'm sure it's going to be very interesting, and I'm actually glad that they're doing it. So all these dipshits out here who are begging for her to come back, or always begging for her to come back when it's some tea or something dropping, so they can see that woman is sick. She didn't lose, her talk show didn't end because she was unceremoniously pushed out or fired or something like that. She's sick. She's almost 60 years old and she's sick. And her health is more important than entertaining you motherfuckers. She needs to focus on her health and making sure her money is right and intact, and loving on her son and her family. Not fucking Hot Topics. So maybe once people see this, they'll get a better understanding of what this woman is going through. And she's too sick to come back to television. She's too sick to do a fucking podcast. Like, people forget that these celebrities, they're people. Like, their purpose in life is not just to fucking entertain you. They're real people with real issues. And now they can finally see that. She's too sick to work. Give her time to get better. You know, maybe she can be better enough in a year or two to do a podcast or a YouTube channel, or maybe even come back to TV in a weekly series or something. But you're never going to get her back 5 days a week on daytime television. She's too sick for that. Get over it. I just hope, you know, she's doing as well as she can be, and I hope her family can get to her and do right by her. And, you know, I just want her to be better. Wendy ain't one of my most favorite people, but what she going through is fucked up, and I wouldn't wish it on nobody. So I just hope she can focus on her health and get better. At least get better enough so she can have some type of quality of life. Not get better to entertain everybody. Have some type of quality of life for herself. And so little Kev ain't got to bury his mama anytime soon.
What about you, Alan? Do you agree with Tiggs's statements there?
Yeah, I get missing Wendy because lately there's been a lot of celebrity news that would be very entertaining for her to weigh in on, like the Nicki Minaj mess. But you know she has something to say about that. And Nicki's husband. But yeah, Wendy's concentrating on herself. Get out of under Liz's conservatorship and get her money, get her health back. Then maybe she can get a podcast or something. But yeah, I will watch the two-part documentary. Hopefully it won't feel too exploitive, like you're taking advantage of her. Hopefully it's fair to her and doesn't make her look bad or anything.
Well, and I think that is such a great thing to mention. Like, this really, I'm hoping that it does feel collaborative, and it feels like Wendy really wanted to do this for people to understand what's going on, like the gravity of the situation. So yeah, I'm very interested to see how this turns out and what they do with it. But anyway, let's go to our final topic of the night, which is discussing the Daytime Emmy Awards. So many changes to the awards in the future. But one big change is, after decades, the Younger Performer category is done. It's over with. They have completely eliminated it, meaning that acting categories now only feature lead performers and supporting performers of all ages. Additionally, reels can now go back up to 18 minutes in runtime. So, Alan, it's a tradition that has ended, and the last person to win the award was Ida McCoy. What do you think of this? This seems to me like a very stupid decision.
It is stupid. Because now it's going to be next impossible for actresses under 30 to get nominated as supporting actress or lead actress. Everyone listening to this podcast knows those categories are stacked as fuck. So you're not going to get... Tatiana Lee is probably not going to get nominated supporting actress next year because, or Ida McCoy, because those actors are stacked. You have to fight off fucking Nancy Drawn, Stacey Haidu, all the other name actresses, Amelia Hindley, all of them. Even if they get a lead story, they're not going to get a lead actress because the policy of the show, they're not going to get into that category because so basically impossible for young actors into those categories. Maybe sometimes you get lucky, like Nicholas Chavez got into supporting actor last year, but that was like rare for an actor under 30 to get into one of those categories. You both know that they traditionally do not like young actors in those categories, and it's gonna be very hard. This is short-sighted.
Exactly. And I think about the newcomers, and I think about the actual children on Daytime who are good actors in and of themselves. I mean, you know, we had Carrie Christopher, and we had Henry Joseph Samiri, who are both 9 and 10 years old, respectively. You know, they submitted 2 years ago, but were featured in last year's award show with Eden. And my thing is like, you know, what if they ever want to submit again? You know, are you expecting, like, Henry Joseph Samiri to go up against, I don't know, John McCook? Like, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It's stupid. I think it's totally disrespectful to any young talent in Daytime. You can even say that, you know, if like Lily Brooks O'Brien from The Young and the Restless, you know, if they ever gave Lucy some great material, how is she supposed to compete with, let's say, Finola Hughes? Like, I don't know. It's just, I agree, Alan. It's so short-sighted.
And they kept the same two categories and kept the ages up to 25. It's stupid.
Yeah. I mean, to get rid of it completely is ridiculous. But Tiggs, what do you think? Do you agree with Alan and I that it is ridiculous, like a WTF moment?
Oh yeah, it's so stupid. It's they should have never gotten rid of the original categories. We already didn't like it when it was, you know, outstanding younger lead performer, because that cut it down. So you had all the girls and all the boys in one damn category. Now you just want to eliminate it all together. And it is short-sighted. It doesn't make any sense. Like, imagine if this was 25 years ago. Like, putting Cameron Grimes in, like, the same category as Erica Slezak. Or, you know, or Linda Dano or something like that. Like, what? It's stupid. Go back to the younger lead actor and actress category. I don't know what the hell Natas is thinking. It's stupid. It better be about two or three ties, damn it, in June, since y'all want to play. Because it's asinine. Like, why would you eliminate that? It's so stupid. It's so stupid. It's so short-sighted. It makes no sense. I mean, it's like almost every year they do something else to, like, just make a mockery of the daytime Emmys. And it's just sad to see. And I feel so sorry for those young performers, because like you said, they don't have a chance in hell. You think one of them babies going to end up against Arian Zucker or Finola Hughes or Moore West or... No. Like... Well, at least we still got guest performers, so my girl Colleen Zink can get her damn Emmy. Exactly. She better get it. She better get it.
And the show politics disincentivized actors from voting for younger actors or like their 20s. Of course, they're going to go for the person they've been working for 20 years and not.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I mean, it's like the only reason they'll vote for a kid at this point is if that kid is the only person from their show that's in that category.
Yeah. I just wish, like, you know, it was bad enough we no longer get two separate categories, but come on, deleting it altogether, what was the point?
There is no point, Casey. They're just doing stupid shit. Like they've been doing for the last decade. Just stupid shit.
Like, soaps are multi-generational. We have the kids, we have the teenagers, we have the college age, we have the 30 to 40-somethings, and then we have your veterans, which are, you know, usually characters who are 50 plus, and they all act together, like they all act and have stories, and they all have a part of the show. So this is just ridiculous, and like I said, stupid. It is stupid. Oh goodness. Well, with all that being said, and with this short list of hot topics coming to an end, Alan, where can our listeners find you on Twitter?
You can follow me on Sorapo.
Very good. Tiggs, what about yourself, dear?
You can find me at the Bin Master Part 2.
Sounds good. You can find me at _case1999. You can also find our show on Twitter at @thechat_podcast. And you can also find it on Facebook at The Chat Show Podcast. And we'll see y'all sometime soon.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.